This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is the latest and newest episode of Earning Their Stripes. Thank you for being here with us. We're going to have a lot of good conversation, ranging from Sixto Sanchez being absolutely dominant to kind of answering the question of what we're going to do with the abundance of all of the outfield talent in the system. Good look at Isan Diaz's production at the major league level as well, and then get to our regular routine with our regular segments. As always, this is Danny Martinez with Ian Smith, Ethan Badowski. Ian, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic, boys. I'm glad to be back talking to you guys this week. And we got some topics that's going to be fun, so I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, Ethan's excited for the football game. How you doing, brother?
I'm cannot wait for 5 days from now, from Saturday. I know I was talking a little cocky before the show with you, Danny, getting all excited. But I just can't wait. I think it's going to be a really fun atmosphere down there in Orlando. And you know, I've been waiting a long time for this game, so I'm really, really excited about that and excited about what's going on in the Marlins system as well. Plenty of stuff going on.
Yeah, my question is, if the Gators really do get upset, how angry and how willing are you guys going to be on the show?
I won't do the show.
I'll take the hit, but if we get upset in this game, then this season's a loss.
Yeah, then there's something wrong. Somebody got hurt or something, man. We'll see.
I will be really humble, I promise.
I'm sure you will. Hey, man,
I can't. All right, so let's dive into it. Someone who doesn't have to be humble and modest at all because he's freaking dominating the minor league system right now, even after his promotion, is Sixto Sanchez. We all know Sixto was acquired from the Phillies. JT Realmuto, best catcher in baseball, was sent that way. Sixto was sent this way with Alfaro. Sixto started off and then got promoted to Jacksonville. He has 17 games in AA. Almost 100 innings pitched. Throughout that time, he has a 2.64 ERA. And listen to this, because it never happens. His fielding independent pitching is exactly the same at 2.64 as well. 96 strikeouts to only 19 walks. We're going to say that again. 96 Ks to less than 20 walks. He has only allowed 84 hits, which means that he has more strikeouts in his time in AA, his first time in AA, than he has allowed hits. It's exciting to see. It's something that we really needed to see in this system. Finally, someone comes over and performs at the top of their ability as a prospect. And I want Ian to start off here, brother. What do you see with Sixto? What have you seen with Sixto? And just how do you feel overall about his performance in AA?
Oh, man. I mean, just in general, for what I wanted to see from Sixto Sanchez this year was 100 innings. I think I tweeted out like the night of the Realmuto trade that was the most important thing for me this year was him pitching 100 innings. And I think he's at 111 between single A and double A right now. And he's been absolutely dominant. I was able to see him a few times this year, and the fastball has been electric. He's had both breaking balls working at plus levels probably all season long. He's looked great. The 96 to 19 K to walk ratio, it's just fantastic. I mean, I don't know what more you can say about that. Everybody was worried about the K numbers early in the year, and then now you look at these numbers now, and it's ridiculous. I mean, the guy has been as advertised. He's been compared to guys like Johnny Cueto, Pedro Martinez, and I mean, you're not gonna say that now, but the kid's 21 years old. He just turned 21. He's gonna have a real shot to probably make this opening day roster next year. I mean, I don't see any way around that. He's shown the ability this year to dominate this pitching. He's not going to see any more competition at the AAA level next year. he might start the year, yeah, maybe, but I think he's gonna have a real shot coming out of spring after this year he's put up this year.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen from Sixto, especially with the way he started, you know, everybody was kind of worried about how much he was getting hit around. He had, you know, 11 hits in one start in at the beginning in Double A, and then 7-7 back to back. I'm looking at these totals now, but I mean, since then, like since he started putting it all together, he's just been amazing. And the last few times out, he's just been absolutely dominant. I mean, his last five starts, 6 innings, 5 innings, 6 innings, 6 innings, 7 innings, and he's only given up 2 earned runs in those 5 starts. He's pitching a ton of innings and looking good throughout games. So, you know, from a longevity standpoint and a sustainability standpoint in terms of him coming back from that injury, you know, there haven't really been a ton of worries about him this year. And like Ian said, like he's at 99 innings in Double A right now on the dot, and that's just, you know, that's what all you can ask for as the Marlins organization is. It's been fantastic. And only 5 home runs for, you know, as hard as that guy throws, like he's not giving up a ton of hard contact. Struck out more guys than he's, you know, than he's let up hits. I mean, what can you say about this guy, you know? And I had Roger Hoover on last week, you know, and in that interview with him, I asked him straight up, could Sixto play in the big leagues right now? And he said he absolutely could. And
swing and a hard grounder up the middle. Twine backhanded stabs behind the bag. Second baseman's got it. Throws to first for the out. And this inning is over. Sixto Sanchez now through 24 innings in a row without allowing a run.
I think he could. And yeah, I'd love to see him. The only thing that the only reason that the Marlins would send him to AAA is to get him used to some like kind of minor, major league level hitting. But he's facing the prospects in Double A and he's dominating like this. Like, I agree with Ian. If he really shows his stuff in spring training, I mean, I don't know why he can't be on the opening day roster next year. He's just been so fantastic this year.
Yeah, and you said something that's really important. You said he's been good throughout games. And that's where I look at a pitcher when they have any type of arm concerns or durability concerns. So the fact that over the year, he's logged over more than 100 innings is telling in itself. But then when you look at the box score, you look at the film, and in the 6th inning, he's still pitching with as much velo and with as much movement, and he's still controlling the pitches, and he's still not giving up walks. He's not giving up hard contact the same way that he was in the 1st and the 2nd inning. It tells you that this is true durability. Right. Yeah. He's not just flashing and then blowing up after the 6th, or his arms just giving out on him after logging 95 innings throughout the year. This is true durability that is so welcomed when we kept hearing all the reports of, you know, Philadelphia was kind of worried about his arm. Then he comes here and he doesn't even start the regular minor league season on time because the Marlins are taking it slowly with him and they're being careful with him. And then he starts in A and has some difficulties, not striking out the guys he's supposed to at the rate that we're accustomed to with him. And then he gets to Jacksonville and it's just like, let's go. I'm the ace and I'm just going to keep pitching until you guys realize who I am and you don't have to worry about my arm. So it's nice to see. It seems like both of you guys kind of hit on the follow-up question of what we would do with him, right? We're kind of saying, look, he's been dominant. If he wants to go, if they have to send him to AAA just to see some major league hitting that might be down there at the 2nd. Sure. But I think we all agree, and someone disagree with me here if you don't, that he at least should get a shot, or at least will get a shot to make opening day out of spring next year. Yeah?
I agree. I mean, I think so. I mean, I don't see why not. I mean, if he's healthy and the arm looks good like it has all year, why not give him a shot?
Yeah, I agree. And just one more thing, Danny, to touch on about the strikeouts. Like we talked about, you know, when the strikeouts weren't there, how he's got to kind of like go outside the strike zone a little bit, but he still peppers the strike zone. And this dude is striking, you know, racking up the strikeout numbers. So, I mean, yeah, like he's ready, you know, he looks major league ready and he looks like, you know, he could be the ace of this Marlins rotation for a long time. And we always had that pitching depth, but until we got him, we didn't really have that ace. And all of a sudden we have the headline guy that's going to headline the system for years to come.
Yeah, I agree. Ian, I have a curveball question here for you. It's not in the notes, okay? So get ready to hit it.
I'm ready.
We have someone in Jacksonville as well who's the same age as Sixto Sanchez and is producing at a very similar production level. Now, he only has 35 innings in Double A because they took a little bit more time to promote him. If we're so confident that Sixto can win a starting position and a starting rotation position out of opening or out of spring training. Why are we not the same with Edward Cabrera?
I think Edward's going to take more time. I mean, not for the fact that he might not need more time. His stuff is ready to play probably at any level, but just doesn't have the amount of innings that he needs at the AA level. I think he probably needs 100 innings at AA before we really know what kind of pitcher he's going to continue to be. This development has been short-lived. It wasn't like he's been building towards this before. This really just came about in 2019 like a hurricane. He's been extremely good, and it was almost out of nowhere. We knew Sixto could pitch coming into 2018, coming into 2017. This kid has had the backstory, but if Eddie can keep up the same pace he's on, I think he'll get a shot probably by August next year. So I don't think it's a long process, but if he's only currently on the DL right now, I believe, if he's not off. But he just hasn't had the time this year. He's probably going to get one or two more starts before the end of the year, and then just let him lead this rotation next year and see what we really have with him.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think that's the thing with Eddie is just like the longevity factor. Like, he just hasn't been as good for as long as Sixto. And like, he's obviously been tremendous this year, and he had a nice year last year. But I mean, the numbers, when you look at them, like, you know, it kind of looks like a bit of an outlier, but he's still been really good in Jacksonville, which is the really encouraging thing. His FIP is a little high, but I mean, yeah, I think the thing is, like, Sixto is that elite prospect, you know, came in as elite. He's been dominant elsewhere. And Eddie was kind of like this, you know, hidden gem, this like diamond in the rough. And, you know, we found it this year and he's brought it out this year. But I think because of that, because, you know, it hasn't been as long that he's been doing this, it might take a little more time. But yeah, I mean, Eddie could, if he dominates a lot, you know, again, next year, he should definitely start in the minors at AA. If he dominates next year, you know, September is a possibility. It's in play.
Yeah, I agree. I don't disagree. I just wanted to see y'all's perspective on this. I'll also add one other 21-year-old that's in AA at the moment, and that's Trevor Rogers. And he has, injury history. There are things with him there that we could also peg along as to why he won't come, definitely, at least in my opinion, come out of spring training with the Marlins. But it's also interesting to say that he is a 21-year-old in Jacksonville, also shoving, okay, and just doing really well on the mound. And he could be someone we see mid-2020 as well with Eddie. It's nice to have both of them there, especially then when we consider that Braxton Garrett's coming right behind them as well and other talent. So, I mean, just Jacksonville is a landmine the same way that Jupiter was before on the mound. It's great to see.
I mean, Rogers is dominating this year. His numbers are insane this year. He's got 143 strikeouts. He's got 29 walks in 127 innings. I mean, he's pitched two complete years back-to-back. This kid's really good, and he struck out 10 in his last start in Jacksonville in 7 innings, only walked one guy, only let up 2 hits. He had like a bit of a wake-me-up start in his first one where he got knocked around a little bit, but I mean, this guy's been really, really good in all year, and he's lingering on the outside of the top 100. We talked about those three arms that are right, you know, 7, 8, 9 in the Marlins system: Rogers, Eddie, and Brax. And Rogers is absolutely lingering right on the outside of the top 100, and I think he should be one sooner than later.
Yeah, by the end of 2020. The Marlins are not going to know what to do with all these pitching prospects.
No.
I mean, they might get traded away. They might try to go land a big fish, as corny as that sounds, in the trade market, or do something where they will use this strength. But man, by the end of 2020, when you add the understanding that we already have a Pablo Lopez and a Sandy who's put together some nice starts, and a Yams who's put together some nice starts, and then we're talking about these guys coming up, it's a beautiful strength. Now, pitching isn't the only strength in the minor league system, at least when we're talking about prospect profiles. This question comes in from one of our listeners. They want us to talk a little bit about the fact there's an abundance of outfield talent throughout the entire minor league system, so much so that a guy like J.D. Orr, who deserves a promotion, can't get one because he's blocked every single level of the way by another outfield prospect. So here's a non-exhaustive list. Okay. At the major league level, you already have a Harold Ramirez. You have a Garrett Cooper and a Brian Anderson, which have other primary positions but can play in the outfield. Then you have these fringe guys who haven't shown what they necessarily would have liked to, with a Lewis Brinson, with a Magnaris Sierra. You have a John Birdie, who's all of a sudden this journeyman who finally makes his debut and has been doing well for the Fish in a rebuilding year. And then we get to the prospects. A Jesus Sanchez, who I believe is just absolutely the best hitting prospect in the system at the moment. A Monte Harrison, Victor Mesa, Mesa Jr., a Brian Miller, Tristan Pompey, Connor Scott, J.J. Blade, Cameron Meisner, Hayden Encarnacion. You get the point. There's a lot of guys, and that's without even mentioning a J.D. Orr and a Peyton Burdick. What is your opinion, Ethan, on what the Marlins do with this very good problem to have? And who do you think comes out finally as the next outfield core for the Fish?
I think if all goes well, and if all goes as the fans, I think, want, I think we're going to get Jesus Sanchez, Monte Harrison, and J.J. Blade as your starting outfield for the Marlins for the next millennium. Is that the most likely scenario? Yeah, probably. I mean, yeah, I was asking that as if I was going to say no, but that is probably the most likely scenario because they're all right there. They're all looking like really solid guys, and they all fit in well because you play Monte in center or right. You play Blade in center or right, and then you put Jesus in left. I mean, it can all work out well, but, you know, obviously it doesn't always go perfectly and as you plan. And the Marlins have a ton of guys that I think they'd really like to get in the outfield. I mean, Cameron Meisner is a beast. He's been hitting really well in Clinton, showing a lot of tools, you know, running well, playing good defense. I mean, Burdick is on fire. Burdick has been one of the best hitting prospects since he joined the system. He's been tremendous. J.D. Orr is really good, like you said. Like, he literally can't get a promotion because there are just too many guys in front of him, but he's a guy that has like a 900 OPS and doesn't even hit for a ton of power. And he's just kind of flying under the radar, not to mention the breakout of Gerard Encarnacion. What will we see from Victor Mesa next year? You know, will we see him start hitting the ball more, tap into some more power, take some more walks? You know what I mean? So, I mean, there are so many ways that the Marlins can go, and I think the likelihood of it, keep an eye on Francisco Lindor and where he played. Keep an eye on some of these guys that's gonna make a position of need. But, you know, all of a sudden then it's like, well, we have Jazz Chisholm now, you know, at shortstop. So it's like we have such this huge problem of like, where are we gonna fit all this talent, which we didn't have, which is so crazy to me because we didn't have it at the beginning of the year, you know. The beginning of the year, these box scores were devoid of anything exciting on the hitting side of the ball. Nobody was hitting really, but now all of a sudden, all these guys are just on tears. And I mean, to be honest with you, you know, at the major league level right now, like BA, I want him to play third base. I think he should be the third baseman of the future. Harold and Cooper, who God knows what's going to happen with them. Brinson, you know, it might be time to. He's been playing really great defense in center field since he's got back, but he just hasn't done it, you know? And so who knows where we go with that. But I mean, a lot of these guys, like, you know, you can only have so many. So a lot of these guys could be really nice trade pieces, as sad as I see to see any of these guys go. But I mean, how does a package of like Connor Scott, Gerard Encarnacion, J.D. Orr, and, you know, one of our pitchers for Francisco Lindor sound? I mean, right now, you know, the Indians might not be that sad about it. So, you know, that's just a hypothetical, and I'm not saying we should trade those guys, but that's what you do in a rebuild. That's what the Cubs did. They had guys that were expandable, that they could go out and get a Jose Quintana, an Aroldis Chapman who helped them win the World Series, a Cole Hamels, you know what I mean? All these guys that they traded for, and that's what the Marlins are setting themselves up to be able to do, to trade for the highest of high quality pitching, like the Astros just did. And you know what I mean? So it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing, but really, you know, realistically you can only play three or four depending on if the DH comes and somebody maybe can move to first base, but now Lewin Diaz is there. It's crazy. It's a crazy clusterfuck in the outfield right now. And I really think that we can, you know, there, some
some way something good is going to come out. I have three really good guys every night in the outfield in Miami.
I mean, I agree with the trade scenarios you're putting out. The offer you said would be laughed at by a lot of teams for star, though. You mentioned the Cubs and what they gave away to acquire some of those players. And you got to remember what they gave away to get Quintana and Aroldis Chapman. It's a Gleyber Torres and things like that. So I think if the Marlins do start having an outlay of talent in the outfield like we're seeing, that it's going to take a J.J. Bleday or Jazz Chisholm to lead a big trade if they want to trade for Lindor or Xander Bogaerts or something like that. I don't think it's going to be a substantial, like a subpar piece of package, but it's very possible that these pieces can pan out to be a trade package once and for said and for all. Hey, Ryan, go ahead, Ethan.
Sorry, you know, like you said, like, what's the problem with putting Jazz in a trade for Francisco Lindor? You know, like, I'm not going to complain about that necessarily. So it's just the loading up that we're doing to be able to swing these kinds of trades. But yeah, it probably will take time.
Absolutely. And I've been talking about this for all week and last week, even with a few people. Like, it's something that's going to be in the cards in the next 2 years. Like, they're putting together so much talent and they're maximizing talent with these offers. If you just look at the Nick Anderson deal. But in 2 to 3 years, I think this outfield could be extremely odd with these guys we have now. I could see an outfield of Jesus Sanchez, Cameron Meisner, and Gerard Encarnacion in Miami in a few years. Like, it's odd to me. I mean, there's so many things that can happen with this team, but it's such a great thing to have so much talent at every level. Victor Mesa was deemed the savior last offseason, and he's not even getting mentioned that frequently as a future. I mean, he's had an extremely down year and things like that, but he hasn't played in 3 years, obviously, but we don't know what we have with him yet. But seeing these guys dominate all around is just so exciting. Like, I can't talk about where we were in 2015 through 2017 and where we are now. Like, just being a prospect fan and knowing what this team has done is so exciting, and seeing the hitters all over the system is just great.
Yeah. For the person that says, like, this question, what do we do with all of this talent and what comes of it? My personal answer is that from this crop of players comes a solution. And I don't mean you're going to get the starting from these three, but a solution will come. So what do I mean? Number one, it's going to come either via trade, like you guys discussed. Okay. And some of these players will be going out, but you get a starter. It's going to maybe come from these guys. I mean, they say 30% of prospects get close to their ceiling. All right. We have about 15 here in the outfield. Let's hope that the right ones, the ones with the higher ceilings, develop correctly. Because if at the end of the day, we get Ethan's scenario of Monte Harrison and J.J. Bleday and Jesus Sanchez, welcome to what would be a fantastic outfield in all of baseball that anyone can be envious of, very similar to what the previous core was with different prospect profiles, but still very similar with high talent. If they don't pan out, then that might be someone else's problem, because we would have traded our assets for their stars. So it's a good problem to have, and a solution will come of it, whether it's a J.J. Bleday and a Monte Harrison and a Jesus Sanchez, or a star somewhere else that's already proven that we're giving up these guys for. I'm going to ask you guys this. We keep going off the notes, but that's okay. That's what makes this fun. I want y'all to choose who your favorite prospect is out of that outfield group. And I just want to see if we have a consensus or if we don't. And what we're going to do is we're going to do two. I want your favorite one and then who would be your runner-up. So, Ethan, go ahead and go first. Tell me who is your favorite prospect out of the outfield
group. Oh, my God. Monte would be my favorite. I mean, that's been my boy, you know, since he came in. I love the swag he plays with, and he was such a great guy when he was on with us. I enjoyed that so much. Monte would probably be my favorite on and off the field. I just love the way he plays. But man, after that, I mean, it gets really tough. I love the way we got Jesus Sanchez into the system. I love Burdick. Been raking all year. I really love Gerard. Obviously, the backbone of this
rebuild right now in a way because he was the number one overall pick. I'll go off the radar a little bit, and I'll go with Burdick. I just love the way this guy's hitting, and his numbers in college were so great. And but Blade, you know, I don't know. There's so many. But Monte is definitely like in his own level for me.
Okay, so you're going Monte number one, and you're going off the wall. Yeah. You said off the board with Burdick. All right, Ian, what you got?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go with Gerard Encarnacion as my favorite prospect in the outfield right now. I think this kid has made crazy strides this year, and it could be something special to see what we can unlock with this guy. And man, Connor Scott, man, is my number two. He's got all the tools to be a real stud in center field. And he's 6'4", and he's 19 years old and already in high A. Like, the kid can be a problem if he unlocks his power. And it's just, there's a lot of guys that you can say, like, I could have went Sanchez, I could have went Monte. I still could have went Tristan Pompey as my guy, but like, there's just so many guys.
And I promise you, to anyone who's listening, and they will tell you this really wasn't planned, but this shows the diversity. We already have multiple guys chosen. Here are my two. Number one, I want to say this from a full perspective. I love Monte. So Monte would be my choice. I think Monte is going to be great. I really buy into the fact that character matters. I think he's going to be a starting piece when the next time that the Marlins are a playoff team. Okay. But if I'm talking just purely on the field, all right, my first guy is likely the safest guy. I really am going Jesús Sánchez. I just don't see any way that this guy falters off a cliff. I don't know if he hits his entire ceiling, but he's going to be productive. That's my assessment. So one, safest guy, Jesús Sánchez. Second is the youngest guy, because I love myself some Victor Mesa Jr. I really believe that he, and this is ridiculous because we're talking about a teenager, okay? But I believe that him coming into the system at such a young age and with that swing that we already see, he is the person that whether it's 3 or 4 years from now, it'll be so worth the wait. It'll be so worth the wait to see him come up, to be a part of what at that point should already be a competitive Marlins team that keeps building upon itself. So with me, I go from safest to one of probably the more volatile because of the age, but with Victor Mesa Jr. And it just speaks to the fact that all three of us can choose six guys, basically, who are all just elite. I mean, not elite at the moment of performance, but could be elite, very a championship-oriented talent in the outfield. So we'll wrap it up with that. We'll wrap it up with that, and we'll go to someone who's already in the major league system. And Ian's going to hit us lead off here. Eason Diaz is someone that we have loved forever in the system, okay? And we've had him on. He's a guest of the show. He was awesome. His brother is fantastic. Everything about Eason Diaz is something that we promote in this podcast because he's deserved it. He comes up to the major league level. He gets his promotion. He's only played 13 games, okay? Throughout those 13 games, he has 9 hits. 7 of those are singles, so we're not seeing much extra base and pop here. He has 1 double. Then, of course, he has the infamous home run with his family being interviewed while it's happening. He scored 5 times, but that's team dependent. He has 3 RBIs, also somewhat team dependent. And then the one thing that I'll pinpoint, and then I'll give it to Ian, that we've seen different from him is the 3 walks to the 18 Ks, right? Now, there's a learning curve that's involved here. I don't believe this is the type of hitter at all that Eason Diaz is going to be once he's figured out his learning curve. But that ratio is why some people prematurely panic, I guess, when a prospect doesn't come up and become Ronald Acuña Jr. right away. What do you see in Eason Diaz his first 2 weeks in the show, Ian?
Well, if we're going to talk about the K's on first of all, I think he's just pressing a little bit. As pretty as his left-handed swing is, there's a bit of length to it. So he's going to get abused by that high and tight fastball early in his career. It's just something he's going to have to adjust to, something he's going to be able to have to get his bat speed around to. He's got the speed and gets the bat around, but you can just tell when that ball is high and tight or a slider at his feet, he's going to get beat sometimes. And it's just adjustments he's going to have to make. His plate discipline is still elite. I'm not worried about that. The kid plays great ball. He's made a few mental lapses in the field, but again, pressing. He's been in the big leagues for 2 weeks. I don't see this as being a long-term thing. I've been seeing some extreme overreaction of this kid as maybe him being a platoon player even, which is ridiculous to me. The kid is a star. I mean, He's got the talent. He's got the power. We haven't seen it quite yet. He's played 13 games. Yeah, 13 games. I'm not really worried yet. 18 Ks is worrisome, yes. But like I said, he's getting beat by major league pitchers. You're not seeing these major league pitchers in AAA. I mean, you're just not. A lot of these guys, he's hitting homers and was hitting homers in the sixth and eighth. And these are relievers that are never going to see the major leagues. So it's going to take a little bit of adjustments, but we've seen this power and we've seen what he can do with the bat. So I'm not really worried about what he can do as a major league player. And I still am highly encouraged about what we can see with him over his career.
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't been able. It's hard to watch the Marlins up here, so I haven't been watching them as much. But everything I hear is that he's still having good at bats and that his plate discipline looks good. Which, if that's the case, then the results are going to come eventually. The strikeouts are definitely a little bit of a concern, but it's a concern in the moment, but it's not a concern for, you know, him in the long term. I still think he's going to be a really, really, really good player. You know, you saw the power, the way he can just turn on a ball and explode on it when he took DeGrom deep. I mean, that was just that moment was incredible, and the hit itself was incredible. And it just shows the kind of potential that this guy has. But, I mean, yeah, you have to expect, you know, not everybody is going to be Tatis and Guerrero and Acuna. I mean, even Guerrero had his struggles when he came up. And, you know, you've seen the way that Bichette has hit since he's come up. Not everybody's going to do that right when they come up to the major leagues. That's not, you know, that's not the norm. You know what I mean? So there's an adjustment period. There's always an adjustment period when you move to a new level. We've seen it with a couple of our pitchers who have struggled in their first few starts. We've seen it with some of our hitters. There's always an adjustment period, and he's just kind of going through his right now, learning how to hit major league pitching. I mean, it's unlike, you know, it is unlike anything you usually see. So, you know, I still think there's no reason to panic. I said recently that I'm not panicking about this guy. I refuse to panic this year. It's just good the point of him being here is to get major league at bats, get used to it, so that by opening day next year, he's ready to go and have a big year.
Yeah, I think the thing with a lot of these prospects, both of you guys hit it, is the fact that there is a learning curve and that not everyone can come up and just be Juan Soto. You know, like you mentioned Guerrero, and then, yeah, Guerrero actually struggled for a week or two weeks where he was king quite a lot. And I'm almost 100% sure I'm on air saying this. Isan Diaz has a documented pattern of struggling in his first promotions. In his first month of AA, we're going to go with weighted runs created plus because, quite frankly, that's the easiest one for people to understand, with 100 being average. First 2 months of AA, like 72, well below 100. He finished that year in AA with 125. He first goes to AAA, finished 65. He repeated AAA, he finished with 131. Now he's at the Marlins. Yeah. He's struggling a little bit. He is working deep counts. So, Ethan, you said you can't see it very often. Yeah, we've watched every game. I've watched every game here. He's working counts. He's just having difficulty finishing the at-bat, quite frankly. He's taken a few third-called strikes, which was odd with him. Something like he's almost sitting on a fastball and they get him with the off-speed. So he's learning. That's what's happening. He learned in AA, and then he dominated. He learned in AAA, and then he dominated. The hope is that he learns here and that he dominates again. Whoever is saying that he could be a role player out of 13 games, baseball's not the sport for you. Like, go watch basketball, because that's just not going to happen when you have a 23-year-old facing DeGrom and Buehler and Kershaw and Marquez and Gray. It's not going to occur. So when it comes to Isan, I'm okay with what's happening. You know, it was a shame that his difficulties bled into the defense a little bit, because his defense was actually perfectly fine until yesterday's game with the multiple errors. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, you see a player who can be a competent big league starter. And I think that's exactly what he's going to be. So nothing necessarily for me to be worried about there. Ethan, I'm going to go to you if you have any final thoughts with that. But if not, let's go into the trending position players, because we haven't spoken about that in a while. But there's a lot of really good points and players to bring up at the moment. So I'm going to let you choose whoever you want to discuss, and then we'll get that ball rolling.
All right, I'm going to hold off on Blade, because I'm going to talk about him later, and I'm letting you guys know that now because I want to talk about him.
Message received.
But Burdick has been incredible. I mean, these numbers right here, 407, 469 OBP, 889 slugging percentage over his last 10 days. I think he hit like two home runs in a game recently. And I love what I've seen all year from this guy. I really do. His numbers in college pumped me up, got me really excited. And, you know, like I said, like everybody expected Blade and Meisner to come in and tear the cover off the ball. And they're hitting well. You know, I'll talk about JJ in a sec, and Meisner's has some nice numbers. But how about going off the board a little bit with Burdick and just seeing the way he's just exploded onto the scene? I mean, sooner rather than later, like, we should see this outfield in Jupiter of Burdick, Meisner, and Blade, which could very well, we were talking about future outfield combinations, that could very well be a future outfield combination for the Miami Marlins. So he's been fantastic this year, and I love what I'm seeing from him, and I was excited about him when I saw him coming out, and he's given me no reason to not be excited about him heading forward.
Sorry about that, gentlemen. But who I want to talk about this week, Lewin Diaz, man. Every time he gets a hold of the ball, it's going over the fence.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot. He's striking out a good amount still, but he's getting a hold of the ball. He's so big. I mean, I try to talk about he had some strikeout problems before he was acquired. And when you look at his numbers, it's not really apparent that he has strikeout problems. But he's 6'7", I believe. And he has an extremely long swing. So it takes him some time to get on the ball. But when he gets a hold of the ball, it goes a very long way. And he's got four homers in the last 10 days. He's got three doubles. He just hits the ball for extra base hits. And he's going to push somebody, maybe Garrett Cooper, for that first base position real soon. Another guy who's been walking at an extremely high pace over the last 2 weeks is Jazz Chisholm at 18%. That's just what I want to see. I mean, his strikeout rate is still 27%, which is, man. But, hey, it's not 34%, and he's walking at 18%. If he can get in these lineups where he's got support around him, he might be able to turn this around and start hitting at a lower strikeout clip. The kid's got so much talent, and if we start seeing him strike out 24% of the time, it's going to be a superstar in the making.
Yeah.
So those are two guys that we just acquired, but they're just – still just making me excited watching him play. I mean, it's been a really fun time to see Jazz in the system.
I want to touch on those guys real quick, Danny. Lewin's walk rate since he's gotten to the Marlins has jumped from 5.8% with the Twins to 11.3% since he's got to the Marlins. His OBP is 325 and he's slugging 588. That's good for a 155 weighted runs created plus, which is pretty exceptional for a guy with a 221 batting average. And then Jazz has a 151 weighted runs created plus since he got here. His walk rate is 10.5%. His walks have gone up a ton this year. And yeah, the best thing that Ian pointed out is that he's only striking out at 24.6%. His average is at 245, which everybody was so worried about when he came over. And his OBP is at 351. They've both been really, really good since they got here. And it's really encouraging to see them jump into the system and kind of fix some of the things that we were worried about.
Absolutely. I'm going to continue to sing the praises of this deadline, whether it's going to bite me in the butt later. But I am so excited with the fact that they've come over and we've gotten immediate results, right? We always preach patience. It's something that we've done on this show often, over and over again. But it's nice to not need patience right now, because when Lewin Diaz comes over and Jazz Chisholm comes over and they start producing at that rate, it's a beautiful thing to see. They identified something they needed. They got it. And it's we're seeing the fruits of it. I won't get too much into the numbers. I'll just say something that's rather impressive for me. Over the last 10 days, the Marlins have quite a lot of bats in their system with an OPS well over 800, okay? In that list, a vast majority of them have been added in the last 3 months. So that's to the point of, I think it was Ethan, but someone mentioned that before you would look at these box scores and you would look at the minor league system and there is just no hitting, no hitting. You have your guys, you have Isan Diaz, you have Amante Harrison, and they were the only things that we could talk about, like pulling teeth, because no one else was. Now, anytime that I do the screenshot for us of the last 10 days, Burdick and Blade and J.D. Oren, Lewin Diaz and Jazz Chisholm, Nick Reddy, Evan Edwards, player after player after player that has been added over the last 3 months. And again, just another chef's kiss to the fact that they identified something and they did something about it. So aside from that, I won't get into the names, but I'm going to let Ian start off with our trending pitching prospects. And this is covering over the last 30 days. What you got for me?
Oh, man. Our pitching is still dominating everywhere. My guy, CJ Carter, he became the closer for Jupiter and has been dominating since he's taken over as that role. His last 8 games, he's went 10 innings. He's got 3 walks, 9 strikeouts, and that's about it. He's given up 5 hits, no runs, and he's just looking fantastic. He's, like I said, I think in our first episode, he has probably the nastiest delivery I think I've ever seen from a guy who's 5'9", pitching at a high level like this. It's been fantastic to watch. Touchdown Tommy is getting back on his game. He's back in Jacksonville, and he looks great. He just needs to get his confidence back, and he can be a dominant reliever. A couple starters that are still looking great. George Soriano's put up great numbers in his last 5 starts. Evan Fitterer still looks like a great pitcher at 18 years old down in rookie ball. I'm excited to see what he's going to do next year in full ball. Nick Neidert is back with New Orleans and is getting his feet wet again. He looks okay. He's walking more than he should right now, but with 12 walks in his last 26 innings, but he's pitching well and he's striking out guys at a high level. So it's exciting to see these guys back in the system and doing stuff at a high level right now. Excuse me. God dang.
Yeah, I would say one guy I was definitely going to talk about and I'll expand on a little bit is Neidert. Just to see him get some longevity. Since he's been back in AAA, he's gone 5 innings, 6 innings, and 6 innings. He allowed a lot of hits in his second start. He allowed 9 hits, but he only let in 3 runs, so that shows him limiting damage. He's got 8 walks, quick math, since he's been back in AAA in 3 starts, which is a lot, but he's got 16 strikeouts in those 3 starts, which is pretty solid. It's just nice to see him getting some innings to finish up the year, and they're pretty clean. 2 runs, 3 runs, and no runs in 3 starts in AAA, despite letting up 5 hits in one game and 9 hits in another. So just to see him limiting damage is really good. And just like I said, like getting some innings back, I think he's a guy that definitely plays well as an AFL candidate this year, just so that he can get some innings, because I mean, he was the best pitcher in our system last year, and if he goes to the AFL and pitches well and then pitches in spring training well, you know, I'm not saying he can start on the opening day roster, but it's not out of the realm of possibilities, and he's easily a guy that can make it up to the big leagues at some point next year, maybe even early. So I think it would be good to send him out to Arizona and get him some innings. And yeah, you touched on Touchdown Tommy, man. He's finally back. Since he got, you know, sadly he had to get demoted, but 1.54 ERA and 0.60 WHIP in his last 30 days, which is pretty impressive. So, yeah, Neidert, just seeing him back on the mound is good. And I mean, Fitterer's been good. Mokma's been pretty good. Palacios is still dominating. So, yeah, still a lot of excitement in the pitching aspect of the Marlins organization, despite all the movement recently.
Yeah, there's so much ridiculous talent here that I get to talk about teenagers, okay? 19-year-old Luis Palacios over the last month, 17 Ks to 1 walk. Brady Encarnacion, we have another Encarnacion in the system, 18 years old, 23 Ks to 6 walks. Alberto Guerrero's 21, so not really a teenager anymore, but 21 Ks to 4 walks. I mean, these guys are at the lowest levels right now. 2 of them being still teenagers and putting up this type of production. Now, yes, of course, it's against other rookie ball and other DSL and GCL competition, but it's still something that shows us where the depth is, where the strength is. And also, while I'm saying this, how crazy is it that I keep reminding myself that Sixto Sanchez and Edward Cabrera are also 21. Like, I'm talking about Alberto Guerrero, rightfully so. Okay, because he's at the level he really kind of should be with his age or around that level. And yet, Sixto Sanchez and Edward Cabrera are doing it against double A hitting. It's it's incredible. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And also, before we go into our segments, let me just say one more thing. Now that we've wrapped up the hitters and the position players, you know, we were mentioning earlier the hypotheticals of a Francisco Lindor trade or whatever superstar you might want to talk about. This is truly the first time since Jose Fernandez was a prospect that we would even be able to sit at the big boy table for these kinds of players. And that is something that we should be excited about, because when you're talking about these pitching depth, this pitching depth that we see in front of us, and we're talking about the hitting depth that we suddenly have this year, I really believe that there is not a single player outside of the elite that the Marlins would not be able to sit at the big boy table for when talking about trades. And that is something that I don't think we could have said ever. Even when we had a Jose Fernandez and a Christian Yelich, it was very top heavy. It wasn't this depth coming through. So just something to really reflect on as we move into our segments, which of course is going to be Ian's segment, best pitcher, best hitter of the week, brother.
Oh man. I've been waiting to talk about this guy all episode, and he's been fantastic the last two starts, and that's Daniel Castano. Oh man, he threw threw a complete game two starts ago, one earned run, five hits, 13 Ks, no walks. He's currently playing for Jacksonville. He was the fourth piece in the Ozuna trade 2 years ago, and he's been fantastic for Jacksonville all year long. He's got a 2.37 FIP on the year in Jacksonville. He's got, I'm sorry about this, guys. 62 Ks to 11 walks.
It's because Castano is so impressive.
He's been really good the last 2 weeks. I knew about him. He's been lingering on the system for a while. He was at the FSL for 2 years and looked good. But since he's got the Jacksonville, he's just turned into a different guy. And that 13K no walk game the other night was just phenomenal.
Swing and a miss, strike three. 13 strikeouts, a baker's dozen for Daniel Castano as he goes the distance. A nine-inning complete game against Mississippi, and a final score of the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp 5 and the Mississippi Braves 1.
Like, oh my goodness, it was just so great to watch him pitch. And just his last two starts overall, 16 innings, 9 hits, 3 earned runs, 2 walks, 16 Ks. He's been really special this year, and I'm excited to see what he can do. It's just maybe a piece down the road in 2 years or so. But
and Ian, before you go to your hitter, I'll say this.
Yes, sir.
I think that Castano is another indicator of what we're seeing with this Marlins system, which is that for all the concerns that we might have and that I personally share, that the Marlins might not be able to target or develop appropriate hitters and batters, they can definitely do that on the pitching side. We've seen a Zach Gallen come over who wasn't supposed to be anything special, and then look at what he's become. Even someone like a Nick Nieder who wasn't, and then in his first year, boom, the young production that they're getting from their teenagers and early 20-year-olds. And Daniel Castano is simply just another example of what the Marlins can do really well, which is identify pitchers and maximize them for value. And like you said, he might be a piece in the rotation or someone that we flip later on, per se, with Zach Gallen, although very different pitchers that we would have had the conversation with a week ago. So I just wanted to say that because I really think it's a testament to what this system has been able to do developmentally on the mound.
Absolutely, man. It's been so exciting to see. And that's a guy you haven't heard about once this year, and he's putting up a fantastic season. Like, it's all over. You can't miss it. But my hitter of the week as well will be Tyler Hyman. We signed him out of Arizona off waivers earlier this year, and his last 10 games, he's just been raking. He's hitting .429, .487, and he's slugging .914. He's got 5 doubles, and he's got 4 homers with 8 RBIs in his last 10 games. He's walked 4 times. He's struck out 4 times. He's a catcher hitting for power in NOLA. He's taken full advantage of playing in the PCL. And he's just been fun to watch this week. I mean, he's got big numbers. He's had big numbers his whole career in the minors. He's kind of an older journeyman type prospect, but it's fun to talk about these AAA guys when they're dominating like this. But those are just my hitters for the week. It's so hard to choose anymore. I mean, we could talk about any one of these guys for 45 minutes. So it's so hard to just minimize everything and talk about a few of these guys, but it's so fun.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have. All right, Ethan, things we love to see.
All right, let's get this one going, boys. We talked about Victor Mesa Jr. earlier. I absolutely love this guy. I love the swag that he plays with. I just love his energy on and off the field. He's a great Instagram follower, even though I don't know how to speak Spanish. He's amazing. But he hit his first home run in the GCL, and that should excite the crap out of all of us. He's been really, really good this year. I'm pulling up his numbers now, but just that he's starting to show some more power, because that was like the only thing that we hadn't really seen with him. Right now, his slash line is 295, 372, 416 slugging percentage. He's got a 126 weighted runs created plus, and he's only he's striking out less than 15% of the time, and he's walking at an 11.4% clip, which is pretty tremendous. So these Mesa brothers, man, they don't strike out. He hits for power, and he's only 17 years old. He'll be 18 at the beginning of September. I mean, this guy is just – we should absolutely be so excited about him. He's very far away. He's still got a long way to go, but we should absolutely be excited about him and the ability, like you said earlier, I think Danny said this, to help us when we're already winning. You know, a guy that can come in and help us like the way Yordan Alvarez has helped the Astros. And I'm not saying he'll be Yordan Alvarez, but, you know, that kind of help could be provided. My next thing that I really love to see is Jose Devers is back in the lineup. He's been playing in the GCL. He's got 20 at-bats, and he's hitting 300 with a 400 OBP, it seems like, over the last 10 days, which is exciting. Just to see him getting some work back, see him in the field. Hopefully he makes it back to Jupiter before the end of the year, gets himself kind of back on track. With the injury this year, he could be another guy that could play well as an AFL candidate. And then the last thing, and I've been waiting all show to talk about this guy, is J.J. Bleda. Finally, he's been putting up the results. I tweeted out when I tweeted out, you know, the tweet was, I'm not worried about Isan and I'm not worried about Bleda and I will not worry about either of them. And there's, he's shown me that I should not have been worried. Since August 7th, this is the last 11 days, he's hitting 317 with a 378 OBP and a 537 slugging percentage. His weighted runs created plus over that period is 171. And he's only striking out at a 20% clip and walking at an 8.9% clip over that period, those 11 days. So far on the year, he's only striking out 19.8% of the time, and his full slash line is 240, 283, 380. He's made that look a lot better recently. He was under 200 not that long ago, and he's got himself up at a 97 weighted runs created plus. So this guy's really getting hot. And we're finally seeing what we expected to see from him. He's played a lot of baseball this year, and it was always going to be a big adjustment to jump right up to high A. So, you know, I wasn't really surprised by his slow start, but he's on fire right now. He's hit a couple dingers recently. He's got showing more power, going into the gaps and getting some doubles. So we have every reason to be excited about this guy, and he's finally showing it. And, yeah, the way he's been tearing the cover off the ball recently has me jacked up, and I'm really, really excited about what we have with this guy. I mean, I always was, and he's only made it more so last week or so.
Yeah, I love that. I love that choice. For like a mental project here, I want you to think about something, okay? If J.J. Bleda had gone to Clinton and had struggled, I think that we will have had a little bit more of a reason, regardless of the learning curve, yep, and regardless of the long season, to be concerned possibly, even though that still would have been a little premature. But this is what I want you to think of. He's in Jupiter, okay? The Jupiter Hammerheads started this year with one of the best pitching talents in that system, or not rather in that system, but at that level, right? With the Trevor Rogers, with an Edward Cabrera, with a Braxton Garrett, whatever the case is. The Marlins were not the only A-level team to have solid pitching. This is the type of pitching that J.J. Bleda went from the SEC in college with aluminum bats to wooden bats for a major league system in Jupiter. It was not going to ever be that easy. Okay.
No,
it was not ever going to be without a learning curve. It would have been lovely to see, but it was never going to be such a simple task for JJ DeBlay to skip into Jupiter and just destroy the baseball. This isn't a Riley Green at a lower level. This isn't a Bobby Witt at a lower, whatever the case is, he went to freaking high A, like he's right there. So I'm happy that we're starting to see him after his learning curve hit the ball a little bit, and not just a little bit, a lot of it. But for those that were maybe a little panicked, I would have understood if he had gone to Clinton. But him being at Jupiter, there was a reason that this kind of took place. So I'm with you, Ethan.
Yeah, it's just like you said, like if he had gone to Clinton, yeah. And that's why I think it's good that he didn't go to Clinton, because it kind of prevented us from getting worried. You know what I mean? And so now he's here and he's raking. And this Jupiter outfield, this Jupiter lineup all of a sudden looks really, really good compared to the way it looked at the beginning of the year when it just looked bad. But now with Girard and him and Burdick and Meisner on the way, I mean, it looks really, really good.
Yeah, Jupiter and Jacksonville next year are going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, lot of fun. All right, so we're going to wrap it up with my under the radar. And you know, we're going to pat ourselves on the back a little bit, because all of us collectively have said quite a lot of under the radar guys that have performed this year, right? I said Demetrius Sims, Sierra early on, George Seriano, Luis Palacios. We've gotten CJ Carter. We've gotten other players that we have dropped, Bubba Hollins, which have produced. This one's going to be a little different, because there's no way that I could get this guy to be under the radar. I just think that people don't understand the year he's having. So for those of you other than Ethan and Ian, obviously, because you don't have access to our notes, I have three slashes for pitching across, and I've blacked out the name of my guy, okay? The three are Trevor Rogers, then my guy from today, and Braxton Garrett. Trevor Rogers and Braxton Garrett are individuals that we believe should be at the very least fringe top 100 prospects the way they're performing, and likely top 100 next year. Now, I do not think that this guy is the equivalent to either of these two. I really don't. I believe that this prospect will eventually be a bullpen piece, although I do think he could be a very strong bullpen piece. But my guy has almost the same amount of innings pitched as Rogers, and he has 20 more than Braxton. He's has less hits allowed than Trevor Rogers over that time, and only 8 more hits than Braxton. He has 1 more run allowed than Trevor Rogers. He has 1 more strikeout than Braxton. And his whip is only 0.05 more than Braxton Garrett. This is the player we're talking about. Very similar to two guys that we talk about ad nauseum about how good they are, except that their name isn't George Guzman. Because, see, George Guzman comes last year and he struggles. He has difficulties with walks. He has difficulties with control. He's this really strong, you know, velo guy, but he can't really pitch. And then all of this year, again, right there with innings pitched, right there with Ks, right there with his whip, okay, which is walks and hits per innings pitched. Now, the biggest difference here, absolutely, is still the control. He has allowed a lot more walks. His walks are at 67, Trevor Rogers is at 29, and Braxton Garrett is at 36. A significant difference here. But when you have a whip that's only 0.05 more than Braxton Garrett, something's happening here. So for those of you that gave up very quickly on a George Guzman, and I get it, because last year, you know, he comes over, he's a top 100 guy, and then he has an awful year. He can't control anything. He's getting hit out of the ballpark almost every start. Just look at the numbers for this year. Understand that he is older, that he does not have the ceiling of these guys, at least in my mind. He could, because of his velo, his movement, regardless of the age. And that even if I think he's a relief pitcher, it's eye-opening how close he is to two guys that we consider future possible aces. So what do you think?
I didn't realize he's been that good. And he's been really good recently. Really, really good recently. But I didn't realize he's been that good over that, you know, over this period of time. I mean, he's even dropped the walks from last year. He was at a 6.0 BB per walks per nine. Now he's at, I mean, it's still really high, but he's at 4.76. So, but yeah, his numbers are really, really impressive. And I didn't even realize how impressive they were, especially that whip, 1.26. So, I mean, still racking up the strikeouts. Yeah, like I said, like I still see him as, and I think a guy that can be an elite closer in this game, but he's not going to go down without a fight to try and be a starter. I've said that all year. He's not going to go down without a fight. He's going to try and be a starter for as long as he can. He's not going to make it easy for the Marlins either.
Right. And that's something that people keep saying, like, oh, okay, just put him in the pen already, right? Like, just develop him as a pen. That's where he's eventually going to be anyway. But quite frankly, I look at this and listen again, I'm going to reiterate, I think he eventually ends up in the pen. I understand. But if you're the Marlins, you can't take him and say, oh, you haven't deserved to be in the starting staff this year. You know, you develop him as a starter as long as you can. You're not going to hurt him by doing that, unless if he really, you know, misuse his innings, which he seems to be okay with. And then if at some point he just pushes himself out of rotation, good, then he's the pen. But it's incredibly impressive what he's done. Although, yes, the walks are still going to be the issue that's going to take him from being a possible Trevor Rogers and Braxton Garrett and make him a back of the pen type of arm. Ian, what do you think?
I think it's going to be tough. I do ultimately think he's going to be an eighth or ninth inning guy for the majority of his career. But I don't think it's going to be at the beginning of next year yet. I think they're going to let him start the year again as a starter and see where this goes. His arm doesn't have that many innings on it yet. He's had a few hundred inning years, but nothing extreme. The walks are still high, but he's striking guys out, and he's battling good lineups at AA right now. I mean, these Trevor Rogers and Braxton Garrett, same age, have done this majority of the years at high A. If Guzman has this year, last year with Jupiter, he's all over he's all over the boards right now, getting talked about. So I think Jorge has put himself in a position, or excuse me, George has put himself in a position to have another chance to be a starter in 2020. But if it starts to go south soon, I think they'll make the transition to bullpen extremely quick.
Yeah, I thought you guys would enjoy this one today.
Yeah, I think next year's a big year for him, and I thought you were going to go off the radar with this. Like, I was very surprised that it was George Guzman. I mean, very, very surprised.
Yeah, I was looking at the numbers. I was actually doing it while I was doing the trending pitching prospects, and I clicked it on strikeouts, and then I saw this, and I just it caught me by surprise. So I just found it by random circumstance. But it caught me by surprise how close he's been to two guys that, again, we have at high, such a high standing. And yet again, it just speaks to the depth of the system, something that we will continue, because this is earning their stripes after all, talking about. All right, fellas, we are what, 5 days away from the Canes upsetting the Gators? I hope
from
that you guys...
40, from that 40 burger you guys are going to eat. I don't know what you're talking about, Danny.
I mean, the funniest thing about the Canes are I saw all these Cane fans making fun of Gator fans because they were trashing Tate last week. But I can't see not every one of these Cane fans talking trash about this depth chart that's about to wax you on Saturday.
This dude's playing wide receiver. They brought this man in to be quarterback, and he's going to be
because he's a gamer and he wants to help out though any way he can, man. Yeah, any way he can.
Yeah, Danny.
Any way he can get on the field.
He's Julian Edelman. Good way to keep him in the university instead of dipping out to the transfer portal.
So we need to end it. This is perfect.
I'm telling you, man, I told him before this game because I had a lesson in 2013. I talked so much shit on Twitter in 2013, and it backfired on me completely when we lost. And I told myself, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to be nice on Twitter and just have good discussions. And then, of course, I get caught up in July and August, big three Twitter. And all of a sudden, I'm calling everybody an idiot for picking the Canes, and I'm saying the Gators are dropping 40 and winning by, you know, three touchdowns or whatever. I don't know. It's either way. Like, I just can't wait to be there. I'm really excited for us to just kick the ball off already because, like I said, July and August, big three Twitter is the worst. And I just can't wait to get this game underway, and I can't wait to. I'm so excited! I'm going to be there. I feel very lucky that I'm going to be there to witness this game. And what I'm really excited about is that we got a home and home coming soon.
I'm really excited for that too.
That's great for both schools. And I mean, I could talk. We could do a whole earning their stripes episode about this game, but you're going to have to eat them. Monday or Tuesday, Danny, is all I'm saying, bud.
Hey, look, we'll still be friends on Monday. I will still be here. I mean, if the Gators lose, I'm not sure if you guys are going to be there, but I will still be here.
I'll show up.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see it. All right, fellas. Love you. Appreciate you. As always, everyone that's listening, thank you for being a part of this. We love what we do. Let us know if you have any questions, and make sure to like, make sure to subscribe, make sure to let us know we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. All right? Y'all have a good one, and go Canes.
1-0. Hit high in the air, pretty deep to center. Lead the center fielder on the run. On the warning track, looks up, it's gone! Lewin Diaz, a homer to straightaway center. And Jacksonville leads 1-0 in the fourth.
Righty on righty, here's the pitch. Swing and a hard grounder up the middle. Twine backhanded stabs behind the bag. Second baseman's got it. Throws to first for the out. And this inning is over. 6-0 Sanchez now through 24 innings in a row without allowing a run. Now we go to the bottom.